had a few wins on Star de Nascra. Speaking of great Maryland breads.
Yeah, the Maryland breads, they've represented themselves well for many, many, many years. You know, you had a restricted race program for Maryland breads, and you didn't need it because they won any place in the country. You know, but Maryland was great racing, still is to this day, of course, great racing. Laurel was a good meet, and Bowie was one of the best winter tracks I ever rode on. It was amazing. And you know what was nice? If you were racing in Jersey and Pennsylvania, when you went to Maryland, it might not be a big difference in weather, but it was just enough where it was a hair milder than what you had if you were racing at Liberty Bell or New Jersey or whatever. The weather was seemed, well, at least we said to ourselves, boy, it's a lot nicer here than it'd be if we were home in Jersey. And I'll never forget one day we got a bad snowstorm I guess we were at Bowie. Maybe it's Bowie or Laurel. I think it was Bowie. And Jimbo and I were on a bunch of horses, and they canceled the races without even the jocks canceling them. So Jimbo says, listen, I get married tomorrow. Let's leave tonight or today, right after they canceled. Let's leave. Yeah, two geniuses leaving Merlin in a blizzard heading towards Charlestown. We got halfway there on whatever it was, 78 or 81, one of them roads, and there was nobody moving. And we figured, we'll get pushed out. And before we got in the car, we threw our laundry in the car because we figured we didn't have to race the next day or the next day. I'm pushing him out of the snow, and he's spinning wheels in this old Galaxy 500, whatever it was. And eventually we got to a point where there was tractor trailers, everybody stopped, nobody moved. Well, us dummies didn't think we were going to be there 24 hours stuck in the snow from that morning, late that morning to the next morning. Well, guess what? We ran out of gas around 12 o'clock. I'm soaking wet. I get in the back of the car, empty the laundry basket, put on the dry clothes. I'm soaking wet from pushing out in the snow. Got all these dirty dry clothes on. He's got all his clothes that he could get on. We got no gas from 12 o'clock that night to 10 o'clock in the morning. You know what? When you got no gas in the car, you got no heat. We like to freeze to death. And we picked up two guys, Denny, these two Maryland grooms that were living in Charlestown that ran out of gas before us, picked them up, and they're in the back of the car. And now we got all the booze for the wedding in the back of the car. So Denny says, man, we're freezing, but we won't be as cold if we drink this, do some of these.
So stupid.
So we drank all the whiskey and the booze that was in the car that we were taking down to the wedding. So that was about 4 or 5 in the morning. We're from 12 to 4. We're drunk as could be, you know. We didn't even know we was cold. But about 5 in the morning, man, Jimbo, I'm freezing. We didn't say it quite like that, you know. I'm freezing. Jimbo's saying, I'm freezing too. And then Denny's in the back seat. Denny stuttered. He was a stuttering guy. He always, Jimbo, I'm so cold. You sure you ain't got no gas? We ain't got no gas, Denny. We ain't got no heat because we ain't got no gas and we ain't drunk no more. So they wound up sending the National Guard with half tracks to pick us up 10 o'clock that morning. Almost 24 hours in the car, 12 hours without gas. 10 o'clock that next morning, we got into these half-track vehicles because that's the only thing that could travel down this road. And the blizzard was over, but the roads were 2 feet of snow. And they took us to the firehouse. So, of course, no cell phones in those days. They don't know where we're at. They figured we either got killed or we're stuck in the snow or whatever. But he was supposed to get married, and we didn't get married that day. We stayed over, and he got married the next day. And I was best man at Jimbo's wedding. February the 18th, because he called me night before last.
That's
today.
I said,
what's the date of that? Yeah, he says, February 18th. Don't you remember we were stuck in the snow, and I was supposed to be married the next day? I said, I knew it was about this time, Jimbo. February 18th.
Well, that's today. It's the anniversary of it.
That's it. And that was 1970. What was it? He said he was married 49 years, February the 8th, the 20th, because he was supposed to get married the 18th. He didn't get married. That was when we were stuck in the smoke. But the 20th, 49 years. So what's 49 years ago today?
It would be go back 50 minus 1. So
73, 72.
72.
And he, 72. Yeah, that was his wedding. And his 49th anniversary was, it would be the 20th because we didn't make it for the 18th.
Too funny.
And no, it's snowing. I'm looking out the window and it's snowing like a son of a gun here, Steve.
Well, it's right now. This is that's hysterical that it ends up being the anniversary. And Tony, two more names, and then I got to get asking on.
Okay,
but
I'm sorry. That,
no, but it's just funny that you've told that story. But the fact that that today's the anniversary makes it even funnier. Two more names that are underappreciated, and actually, I got a couple of updates. One somewhat happy, and one less so. But how about Phil Grove, who won 3,991 races? Yeah.
Charlestown rider. That was like Leroy Moyer's story. Phil Grove. You know, they won a zillion races at Shenandoah and Charlestown. Jimbo left, McCauley left Charlestown, and I'll never forget, we lived right across the street from Charlestown and Shenandoah, right next to each other. And he lived in the trailer park across the street, left Charlestown because he said, you get stuck at these places and nobody will ever recognize that you were a good rider. And that was the truth, you know, and his dad told him, go to Maryland, go to Jersey, go to Maryland. Vince Percalli Jr. And he won 30-some-hundred races.
Phil, and I'm going to guess that Phil Grove has got to be Chris Grove's father?
Yeah, father. Yeah. Yeah, father. Because Chris Grove. Yeah, that he trained, right?
Or, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, and that's his father. But they were all homeboys from Charlestown.
Well, and then I got one more, too. And as it happens, I mean, it's amazing, this chart. There's names here that you just don't see nearly as much. What about Danny Wright?
Danny Wright, he's a steward or was a steward after he retired. And he came under Ray Vogelman, was his contract holder when he had the bug. And he stayed in Maryland, was loyal to Ray Vogelman. And Danny Wright was one of the most dedicated jockeys I ever seen. A physical, beautiful physical specimen, lifestyle that was immaculate, you know, when it came to how he took care of himself. And just a straight shooter, almost to the point where he was so straight that people criticized him, you know. He's too rigid. He's too straight, you know. Got to be a little flexible, but good rider, you know. And I never forget Danny, you know. And I think when he did retire, and they were guys that started around the same time of me, just after or just before, around that era in the 70s. I started 70, and I think Danny started maybe 69 or 70. But he was just a good rider and a good athlete and a good wrestler. That was the other thing. He wrestled, I think, for...
How about that?
Maryland, I think he wrestled. And you know who else was a good wrestler? And I keep bringing Jimbo's name up. It's Percalli Jr. He was West Virginia state champion.
Wow.
There's been a lot of riders that were good wrestlers.
Yeah, Bobby we've talked Colton. About this a bunch.
Yeah.
Well, Jeremy Rose.
Jeremy Rose, Pennsylvania state champion.
Danny Wright had two grade one winners that were really good horses. Cormorant won the Jersey Derby when it was a grade one. And Caesar's Wish for Dickie Small won the Mother Goose. Did we lose Tony? I didn't see how.
Here I am.
There we go.
My cheek touched the mute button.
Oh, Danny
Wright
the worst.
Was a well-respected rider and a hard worker and dedicated to being a jockey. I mean, he did it when it came to his physical makeup. He was took care of himself, physically fit. He carried his wrestling over to being a jockey. You know, it was weight control, physical fitness, and learning his skills. And then Danny Wright was someone to watch. And like I said, the best knock anybody had on him was, man, he's too straight. You know? But that's not a knock when you think about it.
No. Tony, I've got to get to Haskin, but I do. But hold on. Before we go, I mentioned the two updates, and one is somewhat upbeat. Billy Nemeti did not. He was paralyzed in that car accident.
Oh, that's what. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, that's what
and then worked, and then and he just actually, and as soon as our friend Leslie Knopf sent that tidbit, I can remember him working in the racing office at NYRA,
right.
And
Jesus Christ, I am brain dead. Sometimes.
That's all right. You got most of it right. She says that Batia was killed in a robbery.
Yeah, shot. Yeah.
Yeah, at just 21.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I remember that. Some of the demise of riders is sad when we think about it. And, you know, some of the things that we've done because we were so caught up into being dedicated to the business and driving and riding every place and, you know, burning both ends of the candle. And some of it is just unfortunate and untimely. You can't give a reason why it happened. And some of it is because we chose a lifestyle that exposed us to, devastating situations. But, and then some of us are Danny Wright. We're just straight as a string and worked hard and dedicated. And, you know, I kind of lived on both sides of that that story.
Yeah, you have. You're like a question mark.
No secret either.
No
secret.
Well, Tony, you made up for the 2 weeks that we didn't get a chance to talk. And actually, I had a whole different topic lined up for you today because I had Woodbury Payne on Tuesday talking about bits, and and you followed him up, several years ago when we did that, and explained the jock's end. So we'll save that for next week.
Right.
I want you to talk about working with trainers and telling them I need more control. I need, he needs a straight bit. This horse, I want you to explain the bit side from the jock's angle.
We'll do that. And one of the hardest things for a jock to get across to a trainer is this horse needs to stand in the morning in the gate. He's not breaking because he's not acting right, and they're standing. Trainers, a lot of times, they hate to hear that, and they hate to have you say, stand him in the gate. I'll come even over and do it. So he relaxes in the afternoon. He'll relax in the morning. But that's a whole subject in itself, and I'm sorry that I took so long, and I was so long-winded, but I enjoyed it, and I hope you did. Keep up the good work.
Haskin, you're the greatest.
You got Haskin coming up. Hi, Haskin. You take care, brother.
Tony Black riding through the wire. We couldn't pull him up today, everybody. Unbelievable. It's my fault, too, for feeding him, the names off that chart. I hope Steve Haskin was listening, because I'm sure Steve can follow up a bunch of those horse names and some of the connection names. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I'll give you two names you mentioned that were associated in two of the most memorable races you'll ever see. One was, you mentioned Pete Moss.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Danny Wright. I don't know if you remember Pete Moss at all.
I know the name, and I've seen, I think, pictures or references in to his seasons.
Pete Moss ran in the 1981 Jockey Club Gold Cup. This is a field that I'll never forget this race. This is a field that included John Henry, relaxing, who beat the Colts all the time and was obviously the damn easy goer. Silver Buck was in there, who was a track record holder at Belmont, and it was sired Silver Charm. And Temperance Hill was in there. Won the Belmont, Travers, Jockey Club Gold Cup the year before. You had Noble Nashua. I remember him in there. He won the Marlboro Cup that year. Summing won the Belmont Stakes that year. I mean, it was an incredible field. And John Henry took the lead and opened up in the stretch. He was actually, he wasn't a big favorite. He was a lukewarm favorite. And he took the lead in the stretch, and up the rail comes Pete Moss at 50-1. That who's nothing but a router. I mean, he was a decent horse at like 2 miles, a mile and 5/8. But most of the time, he was running in cheaper races if he couldn't get long distances. And he comes charging along the rail, and hooks John Henry basically. And John Henry just holds on to beat him by a head at 50-1. It was one of And that horse became famous off that one race. because nobody really knew anything about him. He's the longest shot in the field. I remember he was 50-1 in there.
50-1. I'm looking at the chart.
Oh, okay. And he was 50-1 in there, and John Henry just held him off.
Shoemaker. Shoemaker on John Henry. Frankie Lovato Jr. on Pete Moss.
Yeah. I mean, just look at these other horses in there. And look at, you know, I'm trying to think of some. Cordero, I think, rode relaxing.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think. Well, I know Eddie Maple rode Temperance Hill. I mean, there was a lot of good jockeys in there.
Well, here, let me run it down. John Henry, Pete Moss, then relaxing. Third, Silver Buck with Jorge Velasquez. Joni's Chief with Jean-Luc Semin.
He wasn't a bad horse either. Joni's Chief was okay, but he was a long shot in there too.
That would have been Gene Jacobs. Then you had Temperance Hill with Eddie Maple. Our Captain Willie with
I remember him.
Samuel. I'm going to forget his first name.
Larry.
Larry Samuel. Thank you.
Larry Samuel.
Noble Nashua.
Our Captain Willie actually was a Darby Dan horse. He was he didn't race in Darby Dan's colors. He ran in his son's colors, Dan Galbraith.
But
he was
DM Galbraith. Yep.
He was a Darby Dan horse. He wasn't a bad horse. He was pretty good.
He was 38-1 there.
In that race too, he had won his last race, but he was not one of the top horses.
You had Noble Nashua with. Which Hernandez is that? Is that Ray?
Noble Nashua had won the Marlboro Cup, beating Pleasant Colony.
George Martens on Summing.
Who had won the Belmont, beating Pleasant Colony, deprived him of a triple crown.
Jacinto on Hecazado.
Hecazado wasn't a bad horse. Hecazado had run some pretty good races. He was a good tough older horse.
And 11th was Amber Pass with Cash Asmussen.
Amber Pass. He was actually Amber Pass had run second to Pleasant Colony in the Woodward that year. He was trained by Sonny Hine. So I mean, this is a hell of a field. So for Pete Moss, and Pete Moss, if I remember correctly, by the way, came from dead last.
Correct.
Race. He was like dead last, turning for home. And I remember he came up through the rail. He came flying on the inside. Nobody was even paying attention to him. All of a sudden, we're saying, "What the hell is that coming up the rail?" And Pete Moss 50-1, and everybody thought he was going to win. John Henry had to really, really dig down and fight to hold him off. So that was a horse that people don't remember. Pete Moss. But back then, nobody even knew what Pete Moss was. They said, "What the hell's who's Pete Moss?" They didn't even know there was something called Pete Moss other than the horse.
Well, I would say the other way would people know what Pete Moss is. They didn't know that there was Pete Moss the horse.
Well, that's true. Normal people would know what Pete Moss was and not the horse. Idiots like me would know what the horse was and not know what Pete Moss was. I never had a car. What do I know from Pete Moss?
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't use Pete Moss on concrete. I had no idea what Pete Moss was until years later. I said, "Oh, well, Pete Moss, yeah, right, that's the horse." I thought maybe they named the fertilizer after the horse.
Well, all right, so that's the Pete Moss story. What about
that's
Danny Wright?
Pete Moss story. Danny Wright. He was the only when he rode Cormorant. Cormorant was the only horse ever to run head-in-head with Seattle Slough and actually get in front of him. And that was in the Preakness. And, obviously Seattle Slough, was the horse. And Cormorant, was a good horse. He was getting good at the time. He was coming off of, some good races, good stakes. And he had speed. And I'll never forget that he was, I believe he was trained by James Simpson, I think, with Cormorant. But I remember before the race, his connections were so high on him that they all came out with T-shirts before the Preakness. And the T-shirts read, "Seattle who?" And they were so confident that he could outrun Seattle Slough. And the two of them hooked up right from the start, and they went 22 and change, 45 and change, 109 and change. I mean, wow. They were out there blistering. And, like, even between the 5/8 pole and the half-mile pole, Cormoran actually got, like, a half-length lead on Seattle Slough. And I said, whoa, you know, Seattle Slough finally is going to crack. Somebody was able to run with him and get the better of him because Seattle Slough had never, ever given up the lead. And Cormoran got a good half a length on him. And then as soon as he did, Seattle Slough came back again and finally put him away. And then had to hold off a closer, a 30-1 shot named Iron Constitution. But I think he missed the track record by like 2/5 of a second. And Cormoran wound up, I think he was fourth. He only got beat a couple of lengths or so. I think, you know, he didn't get beat much at all. But that was Danny Wright. That was his big, the big horse that he rode, and that was that year's Preakness Stakes. A lot of people don't remember it. They remember Seattle Slough winning the Triple Crown, but they don't know much about the horses that he beat. The horses like Run Dusty Run and Sanhedrin, another Darby Dan horse. You know, Run Dusty Run. You know, was the Lehman's, you know, following up on Dust Commander. In fact, his stablemate, Run Dusty Run stablemate, Bob's Dusty, is the horse that Seattle Slough absolutely bowled out of the way to get the lead in the Kentucky Derby when he broke badly. Everybody thought that was the end of Seattle Slough. He was all washed out going in the gate, and he's behind a wall of horses, and Kruger just said, the heck with it, and he just actually plowed those horses out of the way, just bowled his way through, knocked them out. And the horse he knocked out of the way that got the worst of it was Bob's Dusty, who was a stablemate of Run Dusty Run, who was a very good horse. So anyway, that's the stories that came from Danny Wright and Pete Moss, two names that most people don't know. Now they do.
Well, and I'm even I wanted to find a picture. I'm looking at newspapers.com because I've got the chart for that John B. Campbell that Tony won with this Majesty's World. I mean, late in the horse's career, too. He was 7 years old by then. And, you know, his last stake win, second last win of his career. And Pete Moss was here's a story in the Baltimore Sun written by Cameron Snyder. And
don't know that name.
And he says, the long and short of today's mile and a quarter John Campbell handicap is that it might be a smidge too short for Pete Moss and a smidge too long for 38 paces. And,
can you imagine anybody saying that about a horse now? A mile and a quarter is too short for him?
Too short. how great is that?
Was, you know, he was strictly a distance horse. You know, he was like the Parahe of his time. Parahe had won the display handicap. Why he couldn't win a race, but at the end of the year, he 3 years in a row, he won the display handicap, which was 2¼ miles. It was after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, so it was actually longer than the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which was 2 miles at that time. And Parahi won three runnings of it, and Pimos won that race too. That was one of a few big races that he ever won, but. Yeah, he really never got started until they were going a mile and a quarter. So that's why, you know, here you got a mile and a half, and he really took advantage of it.
I see plenty of previews, but I'm trying to find. Here we go, Baltimore Sun recap. So I think maybe it's just the chart. I've already got the chart. I was hoping for a story and a picture of Tony. One of Tony's more obscure graded stake wins. I mean, the John Campbell has a grade two, Steve.
People don't remember, by the way, is that in the wintertime, the only racing was in Florida because, you know, California back then was in another world. The horses didn't travel. You know, Eastern horses never went, you know, went out to run in the Sandy. The handicap was very rare. And the California horses, you know, stayed there to go in the Struve Series. You know, you had Eastern horses, three-year-olds that would go out there for the Struve Series. But, I mean, just to go out there for, like, the big cap, you never saw that. And, you know, Western horses, you were a four-year-old, you ran in the Scroob series, which was big back then. You had the Malibu, the San Fernando, and the Scroob. And then you followed that up with this, and the Scroob was a mile and a quarter. Then they came back with the Sandy the Handicap, which had its own preps, the San Antonio. And so, I mean, everybody stayed out there. There was no reason to, you know, come to Florida. You had the Seminole, which was a prep for the Widener, and then you had the Gulfstream Park Handicap. Those are the big races. But, you know, most of the top stables stabled in Florida. But there were some that still stabled in New York. And there were a lot of good horses up there. And the only race that they could run in was the John B. Campbell. It was a big race. I mean, you can take a look at the horses that ran into Campbell every year. I mean, it was huge. Bowie back then, you know, was the hub of Northeastern racing because there was no racing in New York. New York didn't open until the middle of March. So all of January and February and half of March, you know, the big races were the Campbell and the Barbara Fritchie. I mean, you know, Bowie was the place to go. Hoist the Flag made his debut in an allowance race at Bowie. But if you look at the past runnings of John B. Campbell, you're going to find terrific fields every time. So that was racing back then. You either ran in the Campbell if you were up in the Northeast, or if you were in Maryland, or you can ship in too, or you ran in the Florida races, or you ran in California. That was it. There was no Oaklawn or Fairgrounds.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was there, lucky. But I mean, no, there were no races for anybody to run. There were minor tracks, even for three-year-olds. The Arkansas Derby and Louisiana Derby were for third-tier horses.
Well, this really is a great history, and it started in '64. Kelso wins it.
Yep.
In 64, and then in 65, our friend Leslie's going to go nuts because I'm going to mention Mongo and Johnny Rotz.
Mongo is a tremendous. I mean, Kelso, Gunbo, and Mongo. Those are the three big horses. And, Mongo at some point beat everybody. He beat all
That's
of
a horse.
He was a good horse.
Well, and Steve.
With some really great horses.
Well, and he, there's a horse. In my, I'm going to write this down again because I vow to do this year in, year out, to do the Horse That Time Forgot, HTTF, and Mongo Dinner Party. There's a whole bunch of horses that, State Dinner, I mean, not Dinner Party, State Dinner. We're going to do that feature, that Horses That Time Forgot, and Mongo certainly fits that bill.
State Dinner was like one of the last of the you know, the really good C.B. Whitney horses. C.B. State Dinner was a very good horse. He won a lot of big races.
Looking at this, this is the early 60s. Lieutenant Stevens won in 65. Tosma won it in 66.
Yeah, she beat the boys.
Yep. Big win. And then, well, here's one of your favorites. How about In Reality in 68? It, with our man Chucky Baltazar, who we heard from several weeks ago, from Mrs. Genter.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Mrs. Genter, the thing about In Reality is that In Reality had taken that's winter. He had taken advantage of the fact that Damascus had gone out to California for the Scroob series. And the Scroob just absolutely knocked them out. I mean, it was actually delayed a week, and they had to run it in a quagmire. And I hope he's not listening, but he didn't get the best of rides from Ron Turcotte, who had him stuck down on a rail. Anyway, Frank Wiley finally had to put him away for a little while, so he wasn't around. Dr. Fager he was coming back in a sprint race in March in the Rose Bend, so he wasn't around. So In Reality always try to take advantage of races that didn't have Dr. Fager and Damascus, who he could not beat as many times as he tried. And so he went up there and he won the Campbell. And then he came back to New York and he won the Carter and he won the Met Mile when Dr. Fager came down with a really bad case of colic. So In Reality, that was that winter of 68. That was his big time away from Dr. Fager and Damascus. So he ruled the roost while they were away. Then, of course, he came back and finally faced them in that epic Suburban Handicap. And he took a bad step coming out of the gate and never really, he finished last in the race, never ran again. He got hurt in the race. But In reality, was a really good horse. Really good horse. Who grew up, by the way? He grew up with Dr. Fager at Tartan Farm. They would lead the young horses out, and the two horses on right in front every time they led the horses out. Two yearlings, 2 year olds. So every time they let them out, the two horses in front with Dr. Fager and In Reality.
To back up for 1 second, Steve, back to Tazma. How is it that there is not a stake anywhere named for her?
Well, listen, there's not a stake named for a lot of horses. How come there's no Buckpasser? How come there's no Damascus? How come there's no, you know, all those horses from the 8 year have been totally forgotten by Naira. I mean, Naira was naming races after all kinds of weird horses, like, you know, that Darrell's Joy, you know, the four-star Dave, before it was the four-star Dave, was the Darrell's Joy, who never, ever ran east of the Rocky Mountains. And I don't know how Naira came up with the stakes for him. But you would think Naira, with all these horses, you know, would wind up with stakes named for some of these horses.
She's a Hall of Famer, for God's sakes.
Sure. Oh, she was a tremendous mare. I went with Joan and Mandy to actually visit her. We went to the farm, which was down in the Pine Barrens.
Oh wow!
Down in the Pine Barrens, and I went. I got a great shot of Mandy petting Tazma.
Oh, that's a famous. Well, when you going down to the Pine Barrens to visit Tazma? That's a famous episode of The Sopranos.
Right. I thought I saw some guy chasing another guy through the woods there. Yeah. I heard some noise. Somebody yelling the name Paulie out there. I figured out what the hell that was about.
Oh my God!
But that farm, by the way, the farm. I was trying to find that farm. Really, it was like in the middle of the Pine Barrens. But you know, it was the same. You know, it was the same. Same family that owned her. She was really good. She ran against the Colts. I believe she beat the Colts, like in the Arlington Classic, one of the races at Arlington.
Arlington Classic is right, absolutely, okay. Absolutely. Well, and obviously, Steve, we could go up this list, but I mean, Skip Trial, Broad Brush, Little Bold John, so many.
John ran like 100 times, by the way. That horse was you talk about an iron horse. I mean, that horse ran so many times; it's incredible.
I'll tell you another horse.
One of my all-time favorites won that race too. We took advantage of it. It was my little True Knight.
Oh wow!
True Knight got up in that race. I mean, that was like a real. I remember it was a really, really deep, deep track.
Lou Rondinello.
You never heard of? I'll tell you one thing. There was a horse that won it. I think it was the year after True Knight. I guarantee you nobody ever heard of, named Jolly Johu.
Well, we've talked about Jolly Sonny Adams. Jolly we've Johu talked about Jolly Johu.
At the Little Current.
Yep. Yep. Ben Feliciano rode.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you start looking at some of these names. It was a big race. In fact, the filly I mentioned before, I believe, won it. When I said she won the Beat the Colts, Relaxing, I think, won this race. He won the Campbell.
Relaxing won it. Boy, Angel came down and won a bunch. Relaxing won it in 81.
81. Yeah, that was the same year as the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
I didn't realize.
Colts in a bunch of stakes. She beat the Colts, going long in a bunch of stakes that year. And she was a very, very good filly.
I did not.
Fifth fillies that Angel penetrated her.
For Carl Lizza, though, at the time.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Really? Okay.
That's what's listed. I'll pull that up. I was going to say
that's kind of weird.
Right?
She was a fifth filly, and she produced Easy Goer. I don't know what Carl Lizard was doing.
Let me hear. That may be a mistake.
I had trained for Phipps then, so I don't know. I don't know where Carl Lizard came into that.
That might be a misprint. That happens. I'm going to look that up. That's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. Hold on. Well, Steve, got to shift gears. We got 15 minutes, and I need you to talk about Mandaloon and the Risen Star.
Well, I mean, the Risen Star was, you know, it was fairly predictable. He had the same three horses in the LeCompte in this race, and you know, after the LeCompte, you know, I ranked Mandaloon ahead of the other two because he had a wide trip, and I knew he'd get a better he would get a better Thoroughgraph number. So, you know, I figured he was going to run big here. They put the blinkers on him, and you know, it was predictable. He had a great trip this time. Blinkers obviously helped, kept him a little bit more focused. You know, he had a great stalking trip on the outside, and you know, he was a favorite. So, I mean, he won the way a favorite should win. You know, he's an Into Mischief, but he's got a really, really strong female family. I mean, there's a lot of stamina there, so I could certainly see him going on. You know, as far as the other horses in there, you know, I've been saying every week, and I've been writing about it every week, about, you know, Proxy, that these jockeys have got to stop hitting them left-handed, because every time they hit him left-handed, he ducks to the outside. So they put Johnny Velasquez on him, and I said, oh, wow, okay, you're going to see a big improvement here. So this time, John Velasquez doesn't hit him at all, and the horse ducks out to the outside on his own. And, you know, he's looking at it, so, whoa, and he's ducking out, and meanwhile, Johnny V is hitting him constantly right-handed, and he's still ducking out. So I'm putting that horse on hold. He's got some issues to work out. You know, I think he could be a very good horse. He's a grinder, like Mandaloon, but he's got to run straight. I mean, I thought he was just ducking, shying from the whip, but in this race, he was ducking out on his own, in spite of right-handed whipping. You know, and as far as Midnight Bourbon, well, you know, he controlled the pace in the LeCompte. He had an absolute perfect trip here, just stalking the pace, and he just got outrun in a stretch. I mean, he ran okay, and he lost second to Proxy, just like Mandaloon lost second to Proxy in the LeCompte. Now, you know, with his pedigree, he's the son of Tisnow. If this race was a mile and a 16th, like the Risen Star used to be, I would give him more leeway because he's going to love a distance. But this race being at a mile and an eighth, I don't know. I mean, the jury's out on him because he was just one paced and he had everything his own way. He just couldn't outrun Mandaloon. I think he's a good horse, but he still has to improve off of it. You know, and obviously the big disappointment, the horse that I really liked, was Senor Buscador. And you know, the main thing about him is I wasn't crazy about him skipping the LeCompte because this is a horse who runs only a half a mile every race. So to give him only two races before the Derby means a horse with his running style where anything can happen, you know, he's got to pick up points in his first one. You can't now rely on him picking up points in the Louisiana Derby. He can be flying at the end of that race and finish fourth in a four-horse Floto, and he's not going to get in the Derby. So I thought he'd give him three races. And then not only did he pass the LeCompte, but since the Springboard Mile, he had three furlong workouts and then a half mile blowout. I said, I don't know if this is a short horse or, you know, with his style of running, you know, he just wasn't sharp enough. Now, he was meeting better horses, so maybe he's just not as good as he looked in the Springboard Mile. And the thing about him is that, you know, he was last and he had a lot of ground to make up, but he was in striking distance or at least finishing the money. But then when he hit the far turn, when they asked him to run, everybody else was running. And all of a sudden, the field got completely strung out. And he actually was farther back than he was when he was down the backstretch. So when you pass the 3/8 ball, you say, well, there's absolutely no way in the world this horse has any shot of doing anything. He was just so far behind when those good horses just started stringing the field out. And then he just had way too much ground to make up. And, you know, he was a little green in the stretch and closed fair, but, you know, never really threatened. So I give him another shot, but I just don't know how much bottom this horse is going to have under him now with the way he runs. So, I mean, all in all, it was a good, solid race. I mean, nobody really blew me away. You know, I've got Mandaloon ranked. I've had him ranked in the top six or seven the last few weeks. And, yeah, you got to keep him there, but I'm still waiting for somebody to blow me away. Actually, to tell you the truth, the best performance I saw on Saturday was by this Run Happy Colt. I don't know how far he's going to want to go, but this Run Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought this horse really, I mean, if any horse really left an impression, it was Run Classic. I mean, I just loved everything I saw about him. He got a big, long stride to him. He did everything perfectly, and I liked the way he drew off in that race. And what I really loved about it, and I was hoping the Thoroughbred numbers would come in, but, you know, I haven't even seen him yet. But anyway, he ran a mile and 16th and 144-1. So it was a full second faster than the other division, won by a Pleasure or Sainthood. It was 3/5 of a second faster than the allowance race on that day, which is a very strong allowance race. The feeder was in there, and
yeah,
big leg. It was a strong allowance race. He ran 3/5 faster than the allowance horses. He ran a full second faster than the Rachel Alexandra Stakes, and he was 3/5 of a second slower than the Mineshaft, which is won by Maxfield, who many people think is the best horse in the country. So, you know, you start looking at his time, and you're saying, wow, I mean, it's a pretty impressive performance. He had only had one start, and, it was a kind of a rough trip in his first start. He got bounced around. He was down on the rail, and he found his best stride late, but that was sprinting, and he was stretching out here. Like I said, he's by Run Happy. He's got speed on the bottom. He's got some stamina. We'll have to see how far he wants to go, but as far as being impressed by one horse, it was him. And I was also impressed by Defeater, who, again, yeah, was coming off of one start and on a track that really, again, another thing for Senor Buscador, that track was not favoring deep closers at all.
No.
I mean, you had to be 1-2, basically, at the quarter pole. Come from behind horses were winning, but not deep closers. And you had to be there at the quarter pole. And this horse came from way, way back, coming off of a one sprint race. And Big Lake, who was, pretty highly touted going in there, he opens up a six-length lead at the eighth pole, and this horse comes flying at him and gets beat a half a length. So you got to be high in that horse as well. I think he's a really nice horse. Tom Amos has him, so we'll see where he goes next. But, all in all, I was really looking forward to this stupid Southwest Stakes finally being run. But, they're just getting hammered down there, and it's really messing up a lot of these horses. Now, I know Essential Quality was going to have two starts. So, obviously, he's got to pass the Rebel. So, it's either going to be most likely, I think, the Bluegrass Stakes, or can wait for the Arkansas Derby, but that's 6 weeks. So, you want to run the Bluegrass Stakes, it's only 5 weeks, and he's already won the Breeders' Futurity. So, I'm thinking Essential Quality will wind up there. Which, by the way, is going to leave the Rebel Stakes, by the way, with nothing in there for Bob Baffert to beat with a concert tour. Because there's nobody around. There's nobody that's going to run in the Southwest. It's going to come back in 2 weeks and run in the Rebel. So I don't know who else is going to be in the Rebel that concert tour is going to have to beat. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Keep Me in Mind. I mean, he gets scratched out of the Risen Star.
I know.
He entered an Arisen Star, and he decided, I don't want to ship, I'll stay home. So meanwhile, they missed it. He said, we entered him just in case. Well, you had the ultimate just in case. Your race was canceled. But they didn't, they scratched him out of that race. And then they canceled, and then they postponed it again. So now Keep Me in Mind, who's another deep closer, is going to only have two starts, and we'll have to see. He's picked up some points already from the 2-year-old, but he's going to need racing. So we'll have to figure out where he's going to go. So a lot of jockeying around now to see who's going to go where. But Fountain of Youth looks like it's going to be a strong race. I think the Gotham looks like it's going to be a strong race. There's going to be a lot of good horses, at least a lot of fast horses in the Gotham. So. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I just hope they finally get that Southwest run already. I'm just waiting to see what has going to happen. The thing with Essential Quality is that he's a champ and he's a logical horse to beat. But you just never know. How a horse is going to make the transition from 2 to 3. You think he should be okay, but you still want to see it. And he was ready to run a week and a half ago. you know, almost 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you got to keep working them and working them, and so it's a whole different schedule these horses are on.
Well, and it does seem that the Gotham. I had Safi Joseph the other day, and he's going to consider the Gotham for.
Drain the clock.
Drain the clock. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah. Not only that, but you got Highly Motivated, who hasn't run since he won the Nyquist. He's, you know, he's got some of the highest speed figures. He's in there. Baffert is sending a Freedom Fighter.
Right.
Who ran that huge race last time against Concert Tour. Capo Kane's supposed to run in there. I mean, Gotham could be he could be a good race. Now, Freedom Fighter is a one-turn horse. I mean, Baffert told me that a long time ago. I mean, he's a good horse, but, you know, he looks like he's more like a one-turn horse. A horse like Molly, Highly Motivated, if he wins big there, then he could use that as a springboard to the Wood Memorial, because, you know, he would definitely be on the Derby trail. And, you know, if they go the flat mile with Train the Clock, the thing about that is that, you know, he was talking about that or the Fountain of Youth, stretching them out. But, you know, he ran in five stakes races. When a trainer runs a horse five times in sprint races, he's pretty much, you know, conceded the fact that he looks like a sprinter. And hey, anybody can stretch out. But if he runs him in one turn again, you know, it's going to be hard to think of him as a Derby horse. But I think you've got to think of him more as a one-turn horse. But we'll see. We'll see how far. You never know with these horses nowadays. You don't know who's going to stretch out and who's not. You know, how far is Caddo River going to stretch out? There's a lot of horses now that have shown really good speed. Life is good. Oh, by the way, I mean, I think somebody asked me what's the highlight of the year so far, and the top three would be Life is Good's workouts. I mean, this horse, I have not seen a horse that impressive in a workout constantly with his mechanics. Probably, I have to go back to American Pharoah, which is why I made American Pharoah number one right from the beginning, because he was just the most beautiful horse to watch run. I mean, he had the most perfect stride. Everything about him was perfect. And this horse reminds me of American Pharoah with that. His mechanics are so flawless. He just he was so smooth. He is so light on his feet. Watching him work out with absolutely no pressure on him at all, big, long stride to him. And again, he's into mischief, just like Authentic. You know, you look at him as... Well, yeah, they're sprinters or miler-type horses, but they don't look like them. You know, they're all these long-legged, you know, racy-looking horses, like Authentic and like Life is Good and like Mandaloon. And so, you know, you got to start looking into mischiefs and saying, well, you got to ignore it. Plus the fact that Life is Good's got enough stamina in the female family. Like I said,
well,
mischief's got a ton of stamina.
We discussed yesterday extensively with Sid. And that the female family has got plenty of plenty of stout contributions.
Oh, Mandaloon. You talk Mandaloon or Life is Good?
Mandaloon, and we may have gotten to Life is Good. Who was the comparison yesterday that there was somebody else?
Mandaloon is inbred to His Majesty. That's good enough for me.
That came up.
Yeah. Full brother to Graustark, and His Majesty's a total stamina class influence. And I mean, you just look through his pedigree. I mean, there's stamina everywhere you look in there. So I mean, I have no doubt about Mandaloon, and he's already won in a mile and eighth. So yeah, listen, everybody looked at Authentic last year in the Haskell. I said, well, there's no way in the world they're supposed to get in a mile and a quarter. Well, so much for that. So, you know, they just don't look like sprinters or milers. You know, they're big, long-legged, long-striding horses. They, you know, very light on their feet, big, long-striding horses. So I'm not going to shortchange any into mischiefs anymore. You got to take them very seriously.
You know, and as for Life is Good, I don't know if you did earlier in the week, did you catch, you know, I brought Woodbury Payne back for the conversation about the bits. The last time we did it was involving Vijack and, you know, the way in which Baffert is.
I saw you post something on that.
Yeah, the way Baffert is working with him to, you know, to gain some control and to get him to relax.
Right.
And that's what was so impressive about that, you know, that minute and one effort the other day. I put that workout on as well.
Yeah.
I retweeted that.
Go take a look at the workout before that when he worked in 112 like he was in a total gallop.
Oh, I saw that too. That's right. I think I sent that too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because Baffert had told me a couple of months ago about this horse. And he told me, I spoke to him on the phone, you know, and I asked him, I said, you know, this horse is unbelievable. He told me, he said, the horse is a machine. But he told me months ago that his main goal with that horse is to harness that speed because he has so much speed. You watching him work, he works him by himself. So just watching him work, you wouldn't think this horse is a speed crazy horse. And he's never really gone out there like some, you know, freaky horse that you can't hold. He's even his last start, he just basically fell asleep because he was running so easily. And that was probably the best thing that ever happened to him. You know, it just, like, woke him up. You know, it's like, all of a sudden, Medina Spirit just starts breathing down his neck, and he realizes that this is not just playtime. This is competition. So I think that really really helped him. But I think I'm really looking forward to seeing that horse in the San Felipe. I mean, that's I just want to see him just relax and just I want to see him get hooked. And he will. There's going to be some good horses in the San Felipe.
Steve, this...
You know, he may have to run Medina Spirit in there because he doesn't have the Sunland Derby anymore. So he's got to find some place to run Medina Spirit.
No, exactly. Steve, this was a lot of fun and crazy last second half of the morning with you and Tony Black.
I love
appreciate it.
Tony, talk about all those names that I remember as a librarian. You know, I used to get their pictures, and every time he mentioned somebody you never heard of, their face is implanted in my brain from and filing their pictures and making up an envelope for them. So all these guys, I remember Danny Wright was a really handsome guy, too, a really good-looking kid. But, you know, you start hearing names like Pete Moss and Danny Wright, and it's John B. Campbell, and say, wow, those are the races and the names that I remember.
Just the tip of the iceberg of your memory and Tony. Steve, enjoy the weekend, and we will talk next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Steve Haskin, everybody, at Secretariat.com with his Derby Dozen and more. Thanks to Steve and Tony for a pretty fun second half of the show. Ryan Flanders and Trip Notes conversation, as well as NHC. And before that, Frank Hopf joined us. Sam Houston got an update. They're tabled until next week. And Dick Powell, as we caught up on the international scene, starting with Hong Kong. Good luck today. As I mentioned, Gulfstream Fairgrounds, Charlestown, and Turf Paradise. Limited options today. Good luck, though. And we will preview the weekend tomorrow here. Sirius XM at the races. Replay 6 to 9. And at the website. Archive, podcast, etc. Talk to you in the morning. Good luck, everybody.
Oh, there goes a Buick 49. Black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.